Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. I'm back. Did you miss me? Well, it is March 27th, 2024, and we have a great show for you today. First, the prosecutors in the Koberger matter accuses the defense of jury tampering. The Chad Daybell trial begins next Monday, and he's going on his own. Hey, buddy, can you spare me a dime? I need to hire an expert witness. Was Alec Murdoch untruthful to the feds? Drag Adam Montgomery to his sentencing. And oh yes, Sean Diddy Combs, does he have anything to worry about? And then our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it.
All right, lawyer. Lawyer. Lawyer.
Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for joining us. I know I have been away for a while. Where you been, Scott? Oh, that's right. Yes, you are actually a practicing attorney. That's right. And you just got done doing a 3.5-week jury trial that ended yesterday. And unfortunately, there were more guilty verdicts than there were not guilty verdicts. But yes, it was 3.5 weeks. I thought I was going to be able to try and do it. But 3.5 weeks, we crammed about 5 weeks of work into this. The judge kept us till 9 o'clock one night. Usually we didn't get out till 6 or 7. Then by the time I got home, did a little prep for tomorrow, there just wasn't enough time. My apologies. We haven't been here. We've been bringing you lots of cases that have been going on. Well, I hope you all come back and watch us. We're back. We're going to hit this hard, ladies and gentlemen. Couple of life revelations, I guess, that you have when you're in trial for 3.5 weeks. And, well, you just realize sometimes what are you doing things for if you're not really enjoying them? Anyway, let's go ahead and get to the docket. First, Brian Koberger. So the judge overseeing the homicide case against the Idaho stabbing suspect, Brian Koberger, has barred the prosecution and the defense from contacting potential jurors without express permission from the court. Now, the prosecutor, Bill Thompson, filed a motion with the judge and in an order filed it under seal. And Koberger's defense team, led by the public defender Ann Taylor, objected to another filing under the seal. But both parties are prohibited from contacting potential jurors about this case, including via third parties, until further order of this court, the judge wrote in an order issued on March 22nd, but was only made public just Monday evening. A hearing will be set as soon as practicable. Now, what the heck is this all about? How can the defense be accused of jury tampering? Well, as you may recall, obviously, Brian Koberger is charged there in Latah County, and the defense has filed a motion to change the venue, more than likely to Ada County. Something similar took place in the Lori Vallow case, where they moved it from Madison County over to Ada County, where they have a much larger jury pool. The defense has filed that motion. And normally, when you file a motion for a change of venue, you can't just say, "Oh, Judge, I have anecdotal evidence that the trial, everyone knows about it. We won't be able to get a jury." Normally, the judge says, "We need to wait to start the voir dire process. And if we can't get a jury, then we'll consider a change of venue." But to have some real traction to that motion, the defense, and it's not uncommon, I have done this where you literally hire a surveying company, and the company, whether they do in-person or telephonic interviews, they ask questions. What have you heard about the case? Have you formed an opinion about the case? Do you believe that anyone could be fair and impartial if you knew these facts, etc.? That is what is done so that the statistical analysis can say, "Hey, Judge, here's the population. We contacted these many people in the population, and therefore you can extrapolate that out, that these people have already formed an opinion on the case, and this is our factual evidence to support our motion for a change of venue." Well, apparently there's some robocalls going out or some sort of telephone interviews. The prosecution got wind of it. They filed a motion saying, "You're trying to tamper with the jury. How dare you do that?" When in fact, they're just doing the survey that is really required to support the motion. So anyway, the judge says, a pox on both your houses. Don't do anything until we have a hearing on this, because the defense had filed a motion saying, judge, you can't do this without due process. But the judge says, we're going to have a hearing on it, and then we'll decide. The defense should be able to do this. They're not telling them anything. They're simply asking questions about what people know and if they've formed an opinion about the case to see if their client can get a fair trial. Now, the prosecutor doesn't want anyone tainted, so to speak, because they're of the mindset that, hey, this case has got worldwide attention. Everybody's going to know something about it. So it doesn't really matter whether we move it from Latah County to Ada County. That's just the way it is. But we'll see what the court is going to decide, and then we'll go from there. I don't think there's any misconduct, anything unethical on the part of the defense. And I think the judge just wants to figure out what the heck is going on before he does something. Seems like a reasonable request, doesn't it? Next, the Chad Daybell trial begins Monday. Will Lori Vallow be called? That's right. Chad Daybell has been moved from Eastern Idaho to the Ada County Jail because his trial begins Monday in Ada County. It'll be at the Ada County Courthouse, and the jury selection will begin. Now, obviously, if you've been following this case, but if you haven't been following it, Chad Daybell is charged with conspiracy and murder of his late wife, Tammy Daybell, and the children of his now current wife, who he married just a couple weeks after the death of his wife, Tammy. That's right, J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan, whose mother just happens to be Lori Vallow. Anyway, Chad Daybell has pled not guilty to those charges back in 20 and 21, and the trial is coming almost 1 year after the sentencing of Chad Daybell's wife, Lori Vallow. Now, Lori Vallow was sentenced to life in prison as the death penalty was not an option because the judge eliminated that option because Lori Vallow would not waive speedy trial and the prosecution had violated the court's orders as it related to discovery. Therefore, as a sanction, the judge removed the death penalty. And given Lori Vallow's mental health history, it'd be quite unlikely that she would probably ever get the death penalty. And even if it was imposed by the jurors, unlikely that it would be sustained on appellate review. Anyway, Chad Daybell still faces the death penalty in his trial if he is in fact convicted. Now, the interesting thing that's going to take place with Chad Daybell's case is that John Pryor, who really no one had ever heard of until this particular case, which is fair for 99.999% of all defense attorney out there. But once he took this case, obviously he's been put into the spotlight. He's going to be doing this trial solo, is what we understand. And that is going to be a task. Now, Mr. Pryor gave an interview to a local reporter there in Idaho, and he says that he's ready to tell Chad Daybell's story. Good enough. Jury selection will begin on April 1st, and the trial is expected to last from 8 to 10 weeks. And he says he's doing it himself. When asked whether Lori Vallow would be called to testify, he says, well, anybody connected to the case can be called, but he wants to be clear, I'm not saying the state or the defense is going to call anybody, but there's always the potential that anybody can become a witness. I think it would be highly unlikely that Lori Vallow is called. She has Fifth Amendment issues on her case still pending, as it is up on appeal. Oh, not to mention she has that other homicide case pending down there in Maricopa County, Arizona, as it relates to her previous husband, the one that died at the hands of her brother just before she married Chad Daybell. That's right. So anyway, pretty unlikely that she's going to do that. Now, let me give Mr. Pryor some advice. I just did a 3.5-week trial, and this is going to go longer, obviously, up to 12 weeks in this particular case. This is going to be nearly impossible for Mr. Pryor to do this, okay? I can tell you, if he's not already doing it, he is already working 16 to 18 hour days and probably will get little to no sleep while he is, in fact, in trial. When you show up first thing in the morning, you're dealing with those issues. You're thinking through everything that's taking place for those witnesses that are upcoming that particular day. What other issues do you have as well? Then there's going to be issues that come up throughout the trial that you're going to have to deal with, witness preparation, etc., all that time. And literally, what most people don't think about when you're in trial, I literally lost 3.5 weeks of my life. Family, loved ones rarely saw me, probably thought that, why am I here? Because you're not here. When you're in trial, that's the only thing that really takes place. All right. I canceled a trip that I thought I could make, thinking, hey, I'll just jump on Crime Talk One. I'll be back. It's an hour and a half. It was a birthday celebration. I canceled because I had to do the work. Feel terrible about it. It becomes your entire focus. And about week three, you will get sick from pure exhaustion. And then for a couple of days, you're going to be out of it. So Mr. Pryor, he has got a tough road to hoe on this particular one. He basically is working for free on this case, as he's indicated in the motion to withdraw that he filed months ago. And then he said, basically, it's not about the money, Judge. I'll go ahead and do it. I'm not sure if he has expert witnesses that have been paid or they're doing this gratis as well for Chad Daybell, but he should never do this. Never do a case pro bono, Mr. Pryor. Nothing's going to come from it. You're held to the same standard whether you did it for free or you had all the resources in the world. To do a case like this on your own is going to be exhausting. I can tell you, 3.5 weeks, I had an investigator. I had staff back here running, other attorneys taking care of other issues in the practice, another attorney at the table, an investigator at the courthouse, and I was still exhausted. It becomes your entire focus during the process. So good luck, Mr. Pryor. You're going to need it. Hey, buddy, can you spare a dime? We need to get some expert witnesses. That's right. The defense team in the Richard Allen case, you know, the man accused of killing two girls in Delphi, Indiana, has turned to crowdfunding to cover the costs of some expert witnesses. Now, this is according to the attorney representing Allen's defense attorneys, Bradley Rossi and Andrew Baldwin, in their contempt case against them. And he confirmed that he had organized an online fundraiser seeking $25,000 to pay for Allen's expert witnesses after learning that the prosecutors added expert to their witness list and that Judge Francis Gull would not approve the funds for the defense experts. Unfortunately for the attorneys, guess what? They've only raised $2,255 from 62 anonymous donors. Now, Judge Gull heard several motions at a two-day pretrial hearing last week, including the defense and prosecution claims over evidence leaks. And while Judge Gull has taken the contempt claims under advisement, she granted Mr. Allen's previous motion for a speedy trial of 70 days. And that new trial is going to begin on May 13th. So obviously, I don't know what expert that the prosecution added, but the defense wanted to at least have an expert review. Doesn't mean that they're going to call them at trial, but at least they need to consult with somebody who has an area specialty that can provide some information as it relates to that. Now, in a situation where Mr. Allen's attorneys are state-funded, they have to ask the court to approve those funds. The judge is the gatekeeper. Remember, the same judge in this particular case who doesn't like the attorneys, kicked them off the case. They went to the Supreme Court saying that she was a bad judge. The Supreme Court kind of agreed and sent it back and said, you got to deal with these attorneys. And the judge has denied just about every request that the defense had since made. And of course, that becomes an appellate issue down the road. Gee, would that have made a difference if the judge had granted the funds to at least consult with an expert witness? Yes, of course it would. You would think a judge in a situation like this, high stake, double homicide, give the people the money to consult with the expert witness. But her hatred of the defense attorney is probably overriding her better judgment as a judge. We'll see what comes of that. Once again, gentlemen, don't dip into your own pocket. Do not do that. Just you try the case on what you have and the resources that you were given. Next, was Alec Murdoch untruthful to the feds? That's right. The feds seem to think so. Because the feds have filed a motion, and I say the federal prosecutors there in Charleston, have filed a motion with the court saying that Mr. Murdoch did not tell the truth when the FBI agents questioned him where more than $6 million that he stole ended up and whether another attorney who hasn't been identified helped him in stealing all that money from his clients and his law firm. Now, the prosecutors want the judge to revoke their end of a plea deal with Mr. Murdoch on the theft and other charges and order him to the maximum sentence of over 100 years in prison when he is sentenced in Charleston, South Carolina next Monday. Now, don't get me wrong. Does it really matter? Alec Murdoch is currently serving a life sentence without parole, obviously because the jury found him guilty of shooting his son and wife. Alec Murdoch had pled guilty to stealing money from clients and his law firm in state court, and he had a stipulated sentence of 27 years that his defense attorneys and the prosecutors reached. Now, the prosecutors agreed to that plea disposition as basically an insurance policy to keep Alec Murdoch behind bars in case his murder conviction was ever overturned. Now, the big issue in the feds came after FBI interviews of Murdoch led investigators to believe he wasn't telling the full truth about where at least $6 million ended up and the role of an attorney who has not yet been publicly identified in his alleged crimes. Well, not alleged anymore, the prosecutors are saying. Well, so the prosecutors asked to keep the report on the polygraph test and summaries of Murdoch's four FBI interviews from the public, saying that a grand jury is continuing to investigate and the information could be used to tamper with evidence or influence witnesses. Now, Murdoch's attorneys, of course, didn't respond to the motion just yet, and they will file their response in court. Although the footnote that was in one of the pleas with the prosecutors said they were against keeping the polygraph report secret, which must mean that it reports that Mr. Murdoch is telling the truth. Otherwise, why would the defense want it out there? Obviously not admissible in a court of law, but it can sway the court of public opinion if that matters in any way. Prosecutors say that Murdoch did tell the truth about the roles of banker Russell Lafitte and the old college friend and attorney Corey Fleming played in his little theft scheme. Now, as you may recall, Lafitte was convicted and sentenced to 7 years in prison, while Fleming is serving nearly 4 years behind bars after pleading guilty. Now, Murdoch pled guilty to 22 counts in federal court, and that carries a maximum of 20 years in prison. Some carry a 30-year maximum sentence, but prosecutors said they will ask for the stiffest sentence possible since the plea agreement was breached and require Murdoch to serve his federal sentence at the end of any state sentence, which means consecutive. Now, the prosecutors say there's a long history of federal law that won't allow Murdoch to revoke his guilty plea since he broke the terms of the deal. And the prosecutors in the state estimated Murdoch stole roughly $12 million from clients by diverting those settlement funds into his own accounts or stealing from the law firm. Federal investigators estimate at least $6 million of that has not been accounted for. And Murdoch had said that he spent extravagantly on illegal drugs and becoming hooked on opioids. Investigators said that Murdoch's scheme were about to be exposed back in 2021. That's when he decided to kill his wife and son for sympathy. And Obviously, that didn't turn out too well for Mr. Murdoch. Now, I've said all along, whether it was $6 million or $12 million, I always thought it was a little odd that nobody knew exactly where all that money was going. He was said he was living extravagantly, but it really didn't look like it. I don't know. I think there's much bigger scheme or something that's going on there. Always thought there was. We'll wait and see. Organized crime, perhaps? Politicians? Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. And in a little other Alec Murdoch news, remember the clerk? That's right, Becky Hill, Rebecca. Well, she has resigned her post as the clerk of the court, effective immediately, adding that she would forego re-election just before the filing deadline, citing family reasons. Could that possibly be that her son was under investigation for trying to find out by listening to phone calls to see what people knew about the investigation of her? Politicians don't resign to spend more time with their family. They resign because there's trouble ahead, ladies and gentlemen. We'll wait and see. Next, drag that scumbag Adam Montgomery to court. So the prosecutors in New Hampshire are asking the court to make sure that Adam Montgomery is there when the judge sentences him for murdering his young daughter. So he managed to avoid coming to court the entire time that he was on trial for the death of his daughter. Needless to say, a jury promptly convicted Adam Montgomery in February of charges that he brutally beat his five-year-old daughter Harmony to death. And Harmony's body has never been found. And shortly before the trial began, Montgomery admitted to disposing of her body after spending months hiding it in a duffel bag, a ceiling vent, and a cooler. Now, little Harmony was last seen alive in 2019, but was not reported missing for nearly 2 years. Though he did appear in court for a weapons trial a few months prior, Mr. Montgomery refused transport each day of the murder trial. He attended one day of jury selection before waiving his right to appear. And now the prosecutors want to make sure that he is there so that he gets to look at the judge and hear his sentence. In that motion, the prosecutors asked the judge to compel Montgomery's appearance, citing New Hampshire law that requires the defendant appear in person when the victim or victim's next of kin addresses the judge, unless excused by the court when sentencing for the crime of second-degree murder. The prosecutors noted that Harmony Montgomery's next of kin will personally appear in court, along with other victims by the defendant's crimes, to provide their victim impact statements. And Harmony's next of kin is her biological mom. Not exactly the mother of the year either, but at least she did try to find out where her kid was. Now, Adam Montgomery's sentencing is scheduled for May 9th. He's already serving a sentence of 30 years for being an armed career criminal. So, only time I've ever seen somebody not show up in a criminal case is if they are disruptive. I've had a client removed once because he was disruptive. Never had a client be allowed to waive his appearance at a criminal trial. Not a motions hearing, not an arraignment, because it is considered a critical stage of the proceeding that the defendant has an absolute right to be there for. And if you allow them not to show up, they're going to say, oh, I really didn't appreciate and understand everything. Oh, yeah. I want a new trial. My attorney didn't explain everything to me. I don't know what you guys are doing in New Hampshire. I don't know. Don't get it. Every judge that I think I've ever been in front of, if there had been saying he's refusing to come to court, there would have been a drag order. A drag order is the judge gives an order to the sheriff and says, go bring their butt to court. And if you don't bring him to, well, you're going to bring him to court. And then he's only going to be removed if he is being disruptive. So he should be there. He was convicted of killing his young daughter that he basically tried to stuff down drain pipes and put in a freezer and put in a duffel bag. He should have been there for the whole trial to hear that evidence, and he should have been there. He should be there for the actual sentencing as well. What a coward he is. So, P. Diddy, a.k.a. Sean Combs, does he have anything to worry about? Oh, I think he does. Now, Sean P. Diddy Combs' lawyers issued a statement that the searches of the rapper's Los Angeles and Miami properties by federal authorities in a sex trafficking investigation were a gross use of military-level force, and that Mr. Combs is innocent, and he will continue to fight to clear his name. That was the first statement from old P. Diddy after Monday's raids of his home by Homeland Security. Now, Homeland Security agents searched the residences for an ongoing sex trafficking investigation, apparently initiated by federal prosecutors in New York. Now, Combs was not detained and apparently did speak with the police, and neither he nor any of his family members were arrested, nor has their travel been restricted, which means he is free to go and to leave the country if he chooses to do so. Obviously, there's a little bit of confusion. Where is he? Is he still in Miami? His jet is in Anguilla, down in the Bahamas, I guess, is where that's kind of is. I've known people that have been there. I know somebody's actually licensed there. Still, it's a British colony, I do believe. But apparently, there's no extradition going there. We'll have to wait and see what old P. Diddy does. Now, P. Diddy's attorney says that this unprecedented ambush has led to a premature rush to judgment of Mr. Combs, and there's nothing more than a witch hunt based on meritless accusations made in a civil lawsuit. The attorney went on to note that there's been no criminal or civil liability finding with any of these allegations, and Mr. Combs is innocent and will fight to clear his good name. Now, law enforcement did conduct the raids at his Mr. Combs' multi-million-dollar mansions in both Los Angeles and Miami. Now, the investigation is a, let's say, a step up in the scrutiny of Mr. Combs, who has been the defendant in several sexual abuse lawsuits, civil lawsuits, let's be clear, civil lawsuits. And in a lawsuit Combs settled the day after it was filed in November, his former protege and girlfriend, singer Cassie, sued him alleging years of sexual abuse, including rape. The lawsuit said he forced her to have sex with male prostitutes while he filmed them in the acts. And in February, a music producer filed another lawsuit alleging that Combs coerced him to solicit prostitutes and pressured him to have sex with those prostitutes. Another of Combs' accusers was a woman who said the rap producer raped her 2 decades ago when she was yet 17. Combs and attorneys have denied all of the lawsuits, and obviously we will give Mr. Combs the presumption of innocence. Mr. Combs, let me give you some advice. Yes, I've been busy for the last 3.5 weeks. Yes, what kind of case was it, Mr. Combs? Call me. That's right. It was a human trafficking case. Very similar allegations as, well, you're talking about. Not good, I might add, Mr. Combs. I don't know what you have videotaped, but guess what? They weren't coming for necessarily the videotapes. They're coming for your phones and your computers, and they're going to get all those records. And yes, it's not going to be good, is my educated guess here, Mr. Combs. And all of those individuals who thought that you were the great guy to hang out with because you were providing the party, the place to party, maybe the alcohol, the drugs, all that good stuff. Guess what? When they are looked at and going to spend a significant portion of the rest of their life in prison, they're going to roll on you. And you may say, hey, I am P. Diddy Combs. These people owe me. They're loyal to me. Once they get on the stand, they'll just crumble and melt and they'll change their story. No, they won't. That's the thinking of a narcissist. There may be discrepancies in those reports, but that is what they're going to say. And even if those witnesses completely melted on the stand or under cross-examination, it doesn't matter because they just need that witness to show up. And then they just impeach that witness with their prior inconsistent statements. Obviously, we'll give you the presumption of innocence, our old P. Diddy. But human trafficking, it is the flavor of the month. Everything is human trafficking. Don't get me wrong. There are people that are human trafficked. It is evil. But the definitions are so broad, you could fit that definition, Mr. Combs. Be careful. Lawyer up now. Next, our dumb criminal of the day. That's right. A man who robbed a bank was arrested within minutes while waiting at a bus stop just the other day. Larnie Brewer entered the Byline Bank around 4:17 p.m. and gave the teller a handwritten note demanding money. The note read as follows. Robbery. Hundreds, fifties, twenties. No die pack or I will kill you where you stand. After giving me the money, step back and sit on your hands for 20 seconds. You are being watched. Needless to say, the teller complied, gave Mr. Brewer roughly $545 from the drawer, along with an electronic tracking device, according to the police. That's right. That clerk obviously didn't follow instructions and didn't work out so well for our dumb criminal. The tracking device led law enforcement to Mr. Brewer, who was waiting at a bus stop approximately 500 feet from the bank. After the police stopped Mr. Brewer, guess what? They pinged the tracking device, which could be heard coming from the bag that Mr. Brewer was holding. Shortly after the device pinged, Brewer told the police, "I did it. It was me." Needless to say, he was taken into custody. And the police searched the bag and they found $710 in cash, the tracking device, and purple disposable gloves that matched the bank's surveillance footage. And cameras inside and outside of the bank captured Mr. Brewer during the robbery and the minutes following. Bank robbery these days, ladies and gentlemen, has got to be one of the dumbest crimes ever. It's not just Mr. Brewer's fault. That's what happens. And guess what? Most banks don't have that much money in their drawers anymore. So you're going to go to prison for up to 20 years for $545? That's just dumb. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching. It's great to be back. I hope you want me back. Like, subscribe, follow. You know the drill. Got to get back into that algorithm. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.